From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of February. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up, we'll detail those numbers as they were released by the United States Department of Agriculture this morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can see them right now if you'd like online at willag.org, willag.org. We'll be joined by Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at the reaction in Chicago and discuss what those numbers will mean as we move forward into the marketing year. And Eric Snodgrass will be here too to take a look at the weather forecast for this Friday afternoon. And we'll check in on the Ag News right here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released a series of reports, those that they missed in January, including the crop production numbers and the wheat seedings reports, and, of course, the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, this one, of course, for the month of February. This is what it all meant to the changes in those supply and demand tables. Projected 2018-19 wheat ending stocks were raised 36 million bushels by USDA, that on reduced feed and residual use and lower seed use, feed and residual use lowered 30 million bushels on larger than expected second quarter stocks reported in today's NASS grain stocks report, and seed use in wheat down 6 million bushels, reflecting the 2019-2020 winter wheat planted area released today in the winter wheat and canola seedings report. Winter wheat planted area, by the way, is lower than expected on excessive precipitation and cool temperatures during the planting window. Ending stocks are now projected at 1.01 billion bushels. The season's average farm price is unchanged based on NASS prices reported to date and price expectations for the remainder of the marketing year for wheat. This month, 2018-19 U.S. corn outlook is for lower imports, production, food, seed, and residual use. Corn production is estimated last year at 14.42 billion bushels. That's down about 206 million bushels on a reduction in the yield to 176.4 bushels to the acre. Harvested area also down fractionally. Total corn use down 165 million bushels to 14.865 billion. The feed, seed, and industrial use is lowered 40 million bushels, reflecting a reduction, says USDA, to corn used for ethanol and other industrial uses. For ethanol, the reduction is based on the most recent data from the grain crushings and co-products report, and weekly ethanol production data is reported by the EIA. Other FSI use is lowered 15 million bushels, with lower projections for high fructose corn syrup, glucose, and dextrose. Feed and residual use lowered 125 million bushels to 5.375 billion bushels. That based on a smaller crop and indicated disappearance during September to November, as reflected by the DS1 grain stocks report, with supply falling more than use. Corn stocks are lowered 46 million bushels. The season's average cash price received by producers is unchanged at the midpoint at $3.60 per bushel. Now turning our attention to soybeans, where U.S. oilseed production for 18-19 estimated at about 134 million tons total. That's down 1.5 million from the previous year. A smaller soybean, canola, peanut, and cottonseed crop are partly offset by an increase from sunflower seed. Soybean production estimated at 4.544 million bushels, down 56 million bushels. Harvested area at 88.1 million acres, down just fractionally from the previous report. And remember, that one was released in December. Yield estimated at 51.6 bushels to the acre, down a half bushel, led by reductions in North and South Dakota, as well as Nebraska. The soybean crush forecast raised 10 million bushels to 2.09 billion bushels. Lower supplies and increased crush are partly offset with a 25 million bushel reduction in exports. The ending stocks projected in the soybeans at 910 million bushels, down 45 million bushels from the previous forecast. And that puts the season's average farm price forecast for soybeans at $8.10 to $9.10, unchanged at the midpoint. So those are the numbers from USDA. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to digest what it really meant to the marketplace. And I guess not a lot. There seemed to be some outside influences for the day, Mike, that the trade really was rather thinking were more important than what happened at the Washington USDA headquarters.
Yeah, you know, the last 2 weeks especially, it seems like the tip has been getting a little bit sharper in terms of how Chicago and the trader mindset is looking at the situation in the grain markets, Todd. And I think the African swine fever and the lack of movement forward on the U.S.-China trade negotiations just swamp the other fundamentals that are going to come out. And USDA gave us actually a fairly supportive report when it comes to prices across the board. You could find good news in just about every major category as far as wheat, corn, and beans. But I think the trade is just not willing to step out. And that makes sense because as you get these daily changes in sentiment by the White House or by China, it opens up the supply demand in terms of the global supply demand even more. And then overhanging this market is what will China do with African swine fever? Will they cut through the supply chain and just go after pork imports as much as they can? Tyson alluded to that in their quarterly earnings update this week. We've heard others talk about that. The boots on the ground that I have through clients directly in China are talking about such a large sow kill at this point. I'm hearing numbers close to 6 million head, and I think we talked about that last week, that it would make sense. They would not want to buy as much beans and meal net-net and come in and buy as much pork as possible first. So it makes sense why Chicago's acting the way they did. I think one thing I can say resolutely after today's report is that we don't have as much pressure to go down on the soybeans because of the ending stocks globally. And I think wheat is back in a pull position situation to take us higher if we're going to go higher. And I say that from a standpoint of the winter wheat acres and the time of the year we're at, and also from a standpoint of getting that Egyptian business and being the lowest price in the world for a change.
Yeah, so those ending stocks dropped, 8.61 million metric tons or 316 million bushels for soybeans. That's on the global side. And in the United States, they managed to drop them, 45 million bushels down to 910 million bushel carryout. And I suppose you see that as supportive. It's still a big carryout number, but it's not as big as it could have been.
No, I think you have to have a new reason to be pressed lower, and those reasons very well could be a breakdown in the U.S.-China trade negotiations. Unfortunately, the dial hasn't moved much for me when it comes to beans. The trade is leaning lower in the marketplace before the report came out. I think it's still leaning lower, but it's going to be probably more patient, and I think the best thing I can say about it is that the wheat and the corn, the feed grains together, should be much more supportive to the soy complex, especially if we get a trade deal. The U.S. ending stocks of corn with the 206 million bushel production decline takes us down to 2015-2016 levels. And this week we got fresh year-to-date export volumes from USDA through November. We're still running over 30% higher on exports for corn. Todd, that's about 600 million bushels more than what the USDA is expecting and forecasting in their supply demand report today. So we are very close to the tip of needing to ration demand in corn at this stage of the game domestically, even with South American's crop maybe going higher because of a turnaround in their weather. That's not going to help for the next few months. And that's, I think that's a real important point to make, that corn and wheat do have the fundamentals underneath them to support the beans at this stage after today's report.
Yeah. So a couple of things on the corn crop out of South America. The Argentine corn crop was up 3.5 million metric tons for corn. The Brazilian crop unchanged. Just going back and catching a couple of numbers, the Brazilian soybean crop downgraded by 5 million metric tons, but of course that's from the December figures. They were at 122. They're at 117. That's still way above a lot of the other numbers, like FC Stones. They've been down around 112. Some of the others, some around 115 million metric tons. For those who are thinking, how big is that crop at 117 million metric tons? That's 4.3 billion bushels are roughly. That's this case. So now we have a whole bunch of fundamentals that are in place, and we're looking forward to, I think, the acreage report at the end of the month of March. Did the wheat seedings report from today give you any indication of what that one might show?
Yeah, I think what we're going to see in that report is a market structure shift because of the weather and because I'm looking for a good report, a friendly, price-friendly report. We're 2 cents away after today's close of taking the carry out of soft red wheat, and we're 5 cents away, 4.5 cents away of taking the carry away from the March-July spread. If we see wheat go inverted again, just think back the last time we did that, and it's been a long time, and it's indicative of demand rising faster than supply or supply falling faster than demand. And so that would be a structural shift in the market that I think would be very supportive to the trade and would be very beneficial if we didn't get a U.S.-China trade deal in terms of maybe protecting us a little bit. This is one of those markets where I think Chicago's right that if the U.S.-China trade deal doesn't get done relatively soon, we're going to go past a point of no return, and it's going to take years to get back to where we were in terms of the trade between the two countries because history suggests that. But the supply-demand fundamentals and the macro fundamentals right now are not at the point where they need to take prices down because we're losing demand at this point, in part because supplies are falling. So that's kind of where we're at going into this next report.
This week, in that case, was really not very good news on the trade front. Next week, they're supposed to meet in Beijing at a high level. And if we don't get anything out of that, I suppose it could begin to turn pretty nasty pretty quickly.
Yeah, we went into the report, you know, with buying beans on good news from the trade negotiations and the Chinese purchasing, you know, anywhere from 3.7 to 5 million tons. That's what the Chicago people and I are keeping track of along with everybody else. And I think the bottom line here is that the beans probably still have a premium in them. And so I'm not trying to say the beans can go higher without help. I'm trying to say that the beans can go higher with some help from the feed grains. All three should be able to go higher for a period of time, and my overvalue levels should be able to get hit if we get those negotiations nailed down and we don't take that next level of tariff tranche of 25% on March 1. If President Trump would come out and say, we're not going to meet the March 1 deadline, but we're also not going to raise the tariffs, that would make me feel a heck of a lot better, and I suspect the trade as well. That's the devil in the details.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, that's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and he will be one of a dozen analysts that we have on hand during the All-Day Agricultural Outlook that's coming up on Tuesday, the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not purchased your tickets yet, do it right now online at willag.org. You'll never find a better deal because this is just $30. And for that $30, you get a dozen regular WILL analysts. Eric Snodgrass will be there to talk about the weather forecast. Murray Wise will take up what's been happening in land values, and you'll get fed. Not once, but kind of twice, because when you come in the morning, there's a Beef House roll and a coffee for you, and then the Beef House lunch. That's all on the 5th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can buy the tickets online at willag.org. Register today. The cost is only $30, or you can call this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. The All-Day Agricultural Outlook in its 29th year. Every year at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Boy, I sure am hoping that you'll join us this year on the 5th day of March.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. With 150 years of agribusiness expertise, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. It's been a unique couple of weeks. The spread and the temperatures, Eric, has just been amazing.
Right. You remember, go back a week ago, we were setting record low temperatures. Then we saw about an 80-degree swing in temperatures basically from last Thursday to Monday. And then now we're back down into the single digits to start off the morning. And thankfully, we're going to be warming up. I mean, it's going to go back up. But this roller coaster ride of temperatures we're on is something we just better get used to throughout the month of February. And that's because we've really established a pretty deep trough over the western United States that's going to keep becoming reestablished in that area. And why that's important is that that is going to send most of our low-pressure systems on this Colorado low track, which means they start in Colorado and they head out towards Chicago, which means much of us in the state of Illinois, as each one of these goes by, is going to be split. Southern half of the state is going to get rain, northern half of the state is going to get some snow. Like, we're going to see something like this on Sunday. We're going to see it again on Monday night into Tuesday. And there's another system coming in at the end of next week. So we're certainly getting rocked with a lot of these systems coming up. Now, I think the bigger, more important thing is this really active pattern is causing some major flooding issues. I was just in Memphis, Tennessee yesterday, and there's a lot of flooding down in Tennessee right now and in Kentucky. And we certainly have no drought to worry about, but the major concern is what is the water table going to look like to start off this next growing season? And right now, through a lot of the eastern Corn Belt especially, it is very high. Remember, 2018 was the wettest year on record for many states in the eastern Corn Belt.
Are we looking then for the coming spring, something that's wetter than last year?
Well, that's going to be the big question. We certainly see the pattern we're in right now lasting for quite some time through the month of February. Now, I'm going to be honest. I've looked at some of the longer range stuff as we try to figure out what's going to go on in March. And I've got a big question mark for March. Now, remember, March is one of our most volatile months for weather anyways. But March right now, the big question marks is the polar vortex is still disrupted. The Madden-Julian Oscillation has been dominating our flow pattern. And right now, the global models want to keep much of the month at a cool bias. And just because I'm seeing the Pacific Ocean temperatures warming, I don't think that the models necessarily have that right, but it's a tough forecast. What that means is I have low confidence. What I'm feeling better about is what I'm seeing for April. Now, remember, last April was one of our coldest. It was actually for the state of Illinois, the second coldest April on record. That was partly due to the fact we had a almost permanent trough sitting over British Columbia, Alberta, and that just funneled cold air from the northwest. We also had a weak La Nina. This year, we don't have either of those two things looking at April. So I think we're going to have a more normal April. If I could tell you one thing about it, though, expect this particular spring to return to normal for severe weather activity. We didn't have that last spring. So that's what I'm thinking as we progress through the next couple of months here.
Let's switch geography now and move to South America, where the soybean and corn crop have been under either drought stress or a whole lot of rainfall stress, depending on whether you were in Brazil or Argentina. However, as you look forward into the coming week, it appears that Brazil may be getting back to something more normal.
Yeah, one of the dominant controllers on the strength of the Brazilian monsoon is this thing called the Madden-Julian Oscillation. We've talked about it a few times. It's going over into phase 8, 1, and 2. Now, what that means is that those particular phases are conducive to allowing for upward motion in the atmosphere over Brazil, and that's just going to enhance rainfall. But going into this, remember that we have built up about a 9-inch deficit in rainfall in Mato Grosso, about a 6-inch deficit in Mato Grosso do Sul and Parna. And we've already heard about the disappointing yields coming out of those areas, which are going to take this crop, which was once going to be record-setting, this would be the bean crop, down toward, maybe its second or third largest ever. Still big, but not as big as it once was. I think the other thing, too, is as the safrinha crop goes in, that second crop, it will be going in with, more normal rainfall, or at least closer to it. And meanwhile, that whole thing means that Argentina is getting drier. So that's kind of the bigger players in South America right now.
Can you recap something for me as it's related to the second crop corn or safrinha crop in Brazil? Is your expectation that it will go in under good planting conditions?
Well, I think the unknown is it's been so dry that as they plant this corn, are they planting into some pretty dry soil? But if the rains do come in, that always helps, especially as that corn crop matures. And this also means that the corn crop is going in right on time because that first crop beans was planted right on time, and then the dry at the end of the season meant they didn't have any trouble getting it out, that first crop beans. So we're getting the safrinha crop in and with some rain, so that could point to more favorable conditions.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. Here are some agricultural headlines for the afternoon. USDA has paid $6.4 billion to commodity producers affected by retaliatory tariffs. Producers have less than 1 week left to apply for trade aid payments before the February 14th deadline. In NAFTA news, the U.S. is withdrawing from a six-year-old trade agreement with Mexico on tomatoes. That'll clear the way for new duties on imports, but that also could shore up some votes in Congress, especially from the Florida delegation, for the so-called U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. And finally, on that particular trade agreement, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Thursday that she was optimistic about the chances for passage of USMCA, even as she cautioned that strong enforcement needs to be central to the deal. Elsewhere in Washington, USDA has been keeping track of climate change and said last year was the fourth warmest year in the planet's history. Gary Crawford has more.
Globally, as far back as records go,
all five of the warmest years occurred during the last 5 years.
Agriculture Department meteorologist Brad Rippey says this past year ended up being the fourth warmest ever, and he says that's a little surprising because last year started with a La Nina in place. That's a cooling of waters in parts of the equatorial Pacific, and around the world, La Nina usually
tends to cool the waters and also the land surfaces, so it's even more impressive to see a number four ranking during a year that started as a La Nina year.
Now, what's going to happen in 2019? Rippey says we've got an El Nino pattern developing.
That usually comes with more warmth, oceanic warmth, land warmth. And so already, even though we're only a little over a month into 2019, it is widely expected that this will be perhaps even warmer than 2018.
That's for the entire globe, but it could be true in the U.S. as well. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Hey, well, it's that time of year when everybody's looking at their taxes, including farmers, and there are some things that agricultural producers will be needing to watch this year as they've changed since last year. Rod Bain has more from USDA.
Where are some areas of the new federal income tax rules and regs that farmers and livestock producers should talk to their accountant or tax professional about while preparing their 2018 tax return? Guido Vanderhoven of North Carolina State University Extension notes.
The big topic is what we refer to as Code Section 199A, or the qualified business income deduction, and does the operation, if it's a flow-through sole proprietor, sub-S corporation, partnership, or limited liability company, how does that affect and flow through to the individual tax return?
He says that rule was designed to level the playing field among regular corporations that pay a flat income tax rate.
And then the other one would be depreciation changes. We have had basically three significant changes there.
Involving asset depreciation time periods and declining balance rates regarding assets. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, reminding you to visit our website and check out all of the events we have coming up, including the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. That's Tuesday, the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And the cost is just $30. You can register today at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, or by dialing this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065.